Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 348. And we shall continue with chapter 28, where God is telling Moses, this is the second instruction, about the holy days that are recorded in Leviticus 23 the first time. And Leviticus 23, you would notice that there are all these Sabbaths. There are basically eight Sabbaths that were recorded there. One was the weekly one, and then the others were the annual Sabbath. But the new moon is not there, and here the new moon is introduced as a part of the celebrations that Israel must keep and all the sacrifices that go along with it. And since it was not there in Leviticus 23, some people thought, well, that's not something that we need to keep. It's not a part of the plan of God. Well, obviously it was not placed in that category there of a Sabbath, and yet it was kept as a Sabbath. That means a day of rest. And people didn't go to work on that day, but you know they were able to do certain things that you could not do on the Sabbath or on a holiday. And so this is what we see here. And then in verse 16, we shall go again through that. In chapter 28, God is introducing here again His holy days, beginning with the first Sabbath. And mind you, here in essence, He had done the same as He had done in Leviticus 23, which is important to notice, by beginning the story here with the Sabbath in verse 9. What is it that they had to do on the Sabbath? First, He began with the daily things that have to do on an everyday basis, which you don't see in Leviticus 23, because the concern there was different. The emphasis there was different on the what is known later on, the plan of God. And so you begin with the Sabbath, as we explained that in detail earlier. We don't need to repeat that. And then after that came the other holy days, and every single one of them has a prophetic, historic fulfillment. And so here first He gives them the whole thing, beginning with the daily one, and then with the Sabbath in verse 9, and then verse 11 with the new moon. And then in verse 16 He begins again with the seven annual Sabbaths. They were holy days, you see. They were appointments, mo'adim, that's what He called them. That's how He introduced them. And there were also Sabbaths. And this, in essence, is what confused people, not aware, not studying the law of God in its entirety from beginning until the end. You know, you just go to one section of it and you get a certain impression of it. And then when you put the whole thing together and you study the whole thing, then you begin to get a different perspective on it, the whole perspective. And that, unfortunately, is not the case with most people. They don't do things like that. And that's the reason why we have divisions. And many religions, you know, each one go their own to their own scriptures and prove their own point and create their own doctrines, and that's how they have their uniqueness. Well, that's a consequence of not having one shepherd. And so here, again, He's going through that, beginning with the daily ones and then the weekly ones, which, you see, which is a Sabbath, obviously, the weekly one, and the new moon, which is also a Sabbath, you see, only the instructions for that day were not the same as the Sabbath and then a holy day. In other words, God didn't call it a Sabbath, and He didn't call it a day that must be a holy convocation, you see. In other words, the services generally on this holiday were not something that you had to go. Everybody had to go to the synagogue or to the temple. That was a family celebration. That's how it developed. And yet on a holiday and on a Sabbath, you were commanded to go and appear before God, because it is a holy convocation where you convoke. But on a new moon, they did not convoke. They did it as a family. And that's why it's not put in the same category. And some people thought, well, since it's not, we don't have to go to services. Well, obviously, God did not command people on this day to go to services, but He commanded them to keep it. And in the future, when all things are done exactly as God wants it, God mentions not only the Sabbath as a day of holy convocation where they must all appear before Him, but also the new moon. And so in verse 16 now we begin again with the seven Sabbaths that make the plan of God, as later on became understood. Obviously it was not fully understood in the days of old. And so we read here, in the first month, on the 14th day of the month is the Lord's Passover. It's not the Jewish Passover. It's not the Christian Passover. You know, some people like to play games with these names, you know, to inject their own identity into it. God never gave it a human identity. You see, God gave it a divine identity, the Lord's Passover, and we should always remember that. It's not the Christian Passover, and it's not the you know, when they say Christian, they're talking about people, about congregations and all that, you see. And when they say the Jewish Passover, they're talking about people. And God says, no, this is not a people thing. This is my thing. This is the Lord's Passover. And when we deviate, you know, from the terminology of God, we begin to lose the understanding of what it really means. And that's unfortunately what happens with people. And so it says, no, this is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the month shall be a feast, a hug. You see? A feast is a hug. So here it's called a hug. And in the beginning, when he introduced it, he didn't call it a hug. He gave it the term of Moed, an appointed season, because there the emphasis one was on something else. And so the first Moed, the first appointed, or the first appointment, appointed time, was the Sabbath in Leviticus 23. You see? And probably we should go back there to refresh ourselves. And this is what we read here. And the Eternal spoken to Moses in Leviticus 23 and verse 1. Speak unto the children of Israel and send to them the appointed seasons of the Lord. And actually, you know, in Hebrew it sounds a bit different, but you know, in the translation things are always different. The appointed seasons of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. You know, these are the appointed seasons of the Lord. These are appointments that you have with me. And you're going to have to proclaim them, because there are going to be variables that will determine when you can call it and when not, you know, depending on moon and cycles and things like that. And sometimes you have, for different reasons, you have to make changes, whatever it may be. So you're going to have to be involved in it. You will call it a holy convocation. And even these are my appointed seasons. Now, people who have no background, they may think, well, you know, the appointed seasons, the holidays of God, that means beginning with Passover. And God said, no. The first one is verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. So it's a holy convocation, solemn rest. And it shall do no manner of work. It is a Sabbath unto the Eternal in all your dwellings. You see? So now he introduces the entirety of the eighth Sabbath with this terminology that these are the appointed seasons of the Lord. These are eight appointments, in essence, of the Lord. And the first one is the Sabbath. And then verse 4, now he repeats again. Because now he's going to begin with the annual Sabbath, and therefore he injects this introduction again. These are the appointed seasons of the Lord, even holy convocations. You see, he already said that in the beginning, and then included the Sabbath, and then it's sort of, okay, chapter 1, you know, was the Sabbath. Let's go to chapter 2, second page, you see. And it begins again with the same statement, these are the appointed seasons of the Lord. This is the second statement. Even holy convocations, only this time he's not going to talk about the Sabbath, but about the annual Sabbath. But every single one of them, that is important to notice, every single one of them is a Sabbath, and every single one of them is a holy convocation. You see, every single one of them is a day where no work was allowed to be done. You see, that's what it says here, like in verse 7, in the first day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no manner of servile work. So it was a Sabbath, just like the first one, just like the weekly Sabbath. You see, so everything is a Sabbath, and this is in essence what confused people, because they do not study it properly as it is written, what, you know, God has in mind. And so later on, when he gives them the instruction about the counting of the Omer, you see, they forgot that they are now in Sabbath number 2, and this is the subject, you know, and chapter 1 is already closed, that's a weekly Sabbath, and now he's talking about Sabbath number 2, and it tells them what to do on the morrow of that Sabbath. You see, well, that's exactly, you know, what the Jewish community understood from Sinai. That's what he's talking about. Yeah, they had no problem with it. And that's when they realized that down the road, some people began to have some kind of problems understanding it about the Sabbath, thinking that it was the annual Sabbath, that is, a weekly Sabbath that he was talking about. Well, they just made plainly. In other words, they wrote it plainly. Because when it happened, Joshua made it very plain. You see, that they began to eat of the produce of the land after the Passover. You say, well, some people say, well, and I guess it happened on the Sabbath. So that's how they justify that, so they can continue to count after the weekly Sabbath. And so, that was a human attempt there. It was not something that was done all along, that they had a continuity, that they know what was happening all this time. Because obviously the Jewish community in the days of Christ and after Christ, they still kept it the same way. You see, the Sadducees had their own idea, but very few people follow the Sadducees. The majority follow the Pharisees. And Christ said the Pharisees are the ones that sit in the seat of Moses. They are the ones that really know how to interpret the law of Moses. The Sadducees were not trusted to do that. And the Pharisees determined, just like they've done in Sinai, that the counting should begin after the Sabbath, which is the holy day, the second Sabbath, you see, of Leviticus 23. The first one is the weekly one, and God, when He's talking about the Passover, He's talking about the first Sabbath, you see, of the seven appointments. While if you put the whole thing together, the weekly Sabbath becomes the first one. And that's why He repeated that statement again. These are the appointed seasons of the Lord, even though He already stated that in the beginning by introducing the weekly one. But the holy convocations or the appointments included the eight, and yet to distinguish between the first one and the other seventh, He introduced that statement again. And so that's basically the way it is kept. And obviously, until we have one shepherd, a lot of people are going to do their own thing and have divisions in terms of how they comprehend it or understand it. But basically, that's the way the community is. And even four centuries down the road, the Catholic world, the one that became known as the Catholic world, at the time they were not obviously called by that, but the fathers, as they call them, the fathers of the Catholic world, of the Universal Church, when they looked at the Nazarenes, you see, they made the very plain statements, and if you read the literature of that time, the historians of that time, that the Nazarenes here are the followers of Jesus Christ. As we mentioned that earlier, we quoted that a couple of times, they basically said that they kept everything just like the Jews and in like fashion. You see, and the only difference between them and the Jewish community, they say, was that they believed in the Messiah. And so here we have an admission in the 4th century that everything that the Church of God had done, the people that followed Jesus Christ, the body of Christ, was exactly like the Jews. And how were the Jews keeping it when it came to Passover and when it came to the count? You see, they counted from the morrow of the Sabbath, which is the holy day, the first holy day. And that's why in some of the manuscripts in the days of Christ and before that, the Septuagint that was around, it says very plainly there on the morrow of the Passover. You see, in the Aramaic translation of it, it says on the morrow of the Pascha. And in other translations, it says very plainly on the morrow of the first day. You see, because all pointed to the same thing. And unfortunately, when people did not consult all these things, once they have decided in their own mind that this is what it means, the weekly Sabbath, well, that's the way some people keep it, and others keep it, obviously, the other way. And, it's something that Muhammad says, just very interesting the way he understood it. He says, well, we are Muslims, and you're Jews, and you're Christians, and we have our own divisions, and he quoted something, supposedly, that God told him through the angel, that you have your own differences, and in the last day, God shall resolve all of your differences. And I guess that's exactly what's going to happen with all of us. Until we have one shepherd, we're going to have those differences and differences of understanding. In the meantime, we should learn to live in peace, disagree honorably without being disagreeable. And that's, I think this is in essence extremely important, even though honestly we may have differences of understanding and may be wrong, but we're not allowed to be disagreeable. Because that's a very bad thing. The results are not good, obviously. And verse 16, again, we shall continue from this point. And in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, is the Lord's Passover, because it is killed on the 14th, before the evening begins, before the next day begins. So the next day is called the 15th. But the Passover itself was eaten on the 15th, though it was killed on the day on the 14th. And some people thought, well, now there are 2 days. No, there are no 2 days. The Passover is just a meal. It's a sacrifice that you kill. But the day of the Passover itself is the 15th. And it began with the eating of the Passover, not with the killing of the Passover, because that happened earlier. And another day in that sense. And so this is what you read here. And on the 15th day of the month shall be a feast, a hag. 7 days shall unleavened bread be eaten. And Exodus 12 makes it very plain. God gave the instructions there to Moses. He's the one speaking, not Moses. And he used the same terminology for the Passover and for the day that they begin to eat unleavened bread. Both of them were on the 14th at even. You can go back there and check it out. And that's what God says. In other words, he's telling you that the 15th day with the unleavened bread began to be eaten for a 7-day period. And the Passover itself, the time it was eaten, were both on the 14th at even. You see? Exactly the same terminology. Well, that should have solved all problems for those, you know, who believe in Moses. So what happens when you don't believe Moses? As Christ said later on, well, had they believed Moses, they would have believed me too. What happens when people do not believe Moses? Well, they begin to twist and say, well, there were mistakes there, well, so forth. Okay, until we get to the end time and you know, God is going to resolve all of our differences, apparently people will continue to do their own thing. Verse 18, in the first day shall be a holy convocation, you know, just like any Sabbath. You shall do no manner of servile work because it's the Sabbath. You see, that's what Sabbath means, a day of rest, a day when you stop. That's what the word itself, Shabbat, means, to stop. You see, it doesn't mean rest, it means to stop. And when you say, I want to say rest, and you say menucha, and that was used in the Ten Commandments, a day of menucha. But the word Sabbat itself means, or Sabbath, or Shabbat, means to stop, and that's all it means. And so he said, you stop on that day, just like any weekly Sabbath, but you shall present an offering made by fire, a burnt offering unto the Lord, 2 young bullocks and 1 ram. And in essence, you see here, just like with the new moon, 2 bullocks and 1 ram. And this is what they did on the Passover, on the holiday, and the Sabbath. And mind you, this is where the work was done, and it was holy work, and therefore that kind of work was allowed. So work does not mean, Sabbath does not mean you do absolutely nothing. What it means is you do what God tells you to do, but you don't do your usual daily work. And, you know, that was, you don't go on making a living on that day. And so he says here, 2 young bullocks and 1 ram and 7 he lambs, exactly as a new moon. Of the first year, there shall be unto you without blemish, and their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 parts shall you offer for a bullock, and 2/10 parts for a ram, and several 10th parts shall you offer for every lamb of the 7 lambs, and 1 he goat, again, just like the day of the new moon. And so you find here that there was a reminder of the goat that was offered unto the Lord for sin offering officially on the Day of Atonement. That's when you have both goats, and then on every new moon, and then on every holy day that they have done that. So there were several he goats. You see, so the lamb of the Passover was not the only one that symbolized the death of Christ. You see, and all the sins that he had taken upon himself. The he goat also that was offered on the Day of Atonement and the other new moons and holidays. So there were many of them. You think about the 7 holidays, that's 7. Then you have the new moons, that's 12. You find 19 sacrifices of a he goat as a reminder. And 1 he goat for a sin offering, to make atonement for you. You shall offer this beside the burnt offering of the morning, which is for the continual burnt offering. After this manner, you shall offer daily for 7 days, 7 days of Passover, the food of the offering made. So they're going to repeat it, this thing, 7 days. So in essence, you know, it's more than 19, because you're now having it every day also during the Passover. It's just Passover, we have it already 7. And then the Day of Tabernacles, also you have 7 there, that's 14. And then you add, you know, the other holidays. And then you add, you know, the new moons. You got plenty there of goats for sin offering. After this manner, you shall offer daily for 7 days the food of offering made by fire of a sweet savor unto the Lord. It shall be offered beside the continual burnt offering and the drink offering thereof. And on the 7th day, you shall have another holy convocation. That means another Sabbath. That's the 3rd Sabbath of the plan of God. You shall do no manner of servile work. So if at this point God is going to introduce another instruction on the moral of the Sabbath, Some people are going to still again get mixed up and think it's a weekly Sabbath instead of thinking, no, this is now the third Sabbath that he's talking about. And that's unfortunately what happens when people do not consider the whole matter. And so we read here, and on the seventh day you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no manner of servile work. Also in the day of the first fruits, we're talking about the day of Shavuot, the first, you know, Feast of Weeks. It's called the day of first fruits, not called Pentecost. You see, people began to call it Pentecost in the after the famous Pentecost 2,000 years ago, you see, but nowhere in the Jewish community it is called Pentecost, and nowhere in the history of the church that followed Christ, you see, and the disciples, they called it Pentecost. That was something that was given to it by another source. You see, they called it first fruit. That's what it means. You see, and it means Feast of Weeks. That's what it means. So these are the names in Hebrew. And first fruit here is in Hebrew, the word is Bikurim. And nobody in the Jewish community knows it by the name of Pentecost until, you know, they come to the world outside of the community of Israel, and there, you know, they use this word Pentecost. So now even the Jews use this name Pentecost, but, you know, if they want to speak in English, but generally they use the Hebrew word for it, Bikurim or Shavuot. That's the official one in the calendar, Shavuot or Bikurim, but not Pentecost. That, you know, this one they reserve for the other church that calls itself the true church. Verse 26, also in the day of the first fruits, when you bring a new meal offering unto the Eternal in your Feast of Weeks. You see? That's the name of it. It's a day of Bikurim, and it's a day of Feast of Weeks. B'Shavuotechem. That's what he calls it here. In your weeks. You know, that's the exact translation. You shall have holy convocations. You shall do no manner of servile work. So that's Sabbath number four. You see, in the plan of salvation. And so, if God gave any instruction after this Sabbath, you see, this is what he means, not the weekly Sabbath. And then again, there will always be people that will go back again, always to the first Sabbath. It's this sort of, you know, people with blinders, and they cannot see beyond that narrow tunnel vision that they have. Every time they hear Sabbath, they go, they jump to the first one. Well, God says he's not talking about that. And that's in essence, unfortunately, what happened in this case, with the confusion about when do you keep the feast of weeks, of the first fruit. And so he says, it's a holy convocation, no matter of work shall you do upon it. In other words, it's a Sabbath, you stop, no work. So it's a Sabbath. But you shall present a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto the Lord, two young bullocks, one ram, seven he lambs of the first year, and every holiday and every new moon, that was the same. And their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 parts for each bullock, 2/10 parts for one ram, and several 10th parts for every lamb, all the seven lambs, one he goat to make atonement for you, again, another he goat, beside the continual burnt offering, and the meal offering thereof, ye shall offer them, and they shall be unto you without blemish, and their drink offerings. In other words, in this chapter, 28 and then 29, you really have the entirety of the series of the appointments, of the holidays, of the time to appear before God. Well, in Leviticus 23, it is limited to the Sabbath and the holidays, but you don't have the new moons there. And so here is sort of an expansion of that. And then this is what we read here. So again in verse 31, he says that all the sacrifices are beside the continual burnt offering and the meal offering thereof, and you shall offer them, they shall be unto you without blemish, and their drink offerings. And then we go to chapter 29, verse 1, and in the seventh month, on the first day of the month, and so we're talking here about a new moon and also a holy day, so it's double Sabbath, you shall have a holy convocation, you shall do no manner of servile work. You see, now the new moon falls on a holiday, the holiday falls on a new moon, and in this case, that new moon becomes sanctified in a manner that all the others are not. Because all the others, they were not holy convocations, in all the other new moons, you did not necessarily have to appear before God, only if you were in Jerusalem, the temple, and that was assembly celebration. In this case, it's a unique one. It's a day where you appear before God. It's a holy convocation. It's a Sabbath. So this is Sabbath number 4. And you shall do no manner of servile work. It is the day of blowing the horn unto you. Yom Teruah. It does not say horn here, but the word Teruah here has been, from the days of Sinai, understood by the community of Israel. And later on, when Israel went astray, still they retained that knowledge and understanding, but the Jewish community continued to do it, the house of Judah, and to this very day. So even though it does not say Teruah, this is what a lot of people don't realize. The Bible, when you read it in Hebrew, it has many incomplete sentences, or incomplete thoughts, or incomplete idioms. But everybody knows exactly what it means, you see? And so, for people who have no knowledge of that, they go and read a certain thing and say, well, it says here Yom Teruah, but it doesn't say horn, you see? And so they make a point out of that, and they come up with their own understanding. Well, if you understand the language and the culture and the way the Bible has been written, the way you see it in Hebrew, you don't have a problem with that. And what happens when you don't have that background? Well, that's when problems begin, and divisions, and, you know, misunderstandings and all those kind of things. And the wise is going to seek multitude of counsels, you know, go to the mouse hole, go to the source, horse's mouth, whatever it may be, and find out. In other words, don't be wise in your own conceit. A lot of people are, unfortunately, without even realizing it. So they do not consider the whole matter, and you know what King Solomon says about people like that. And we have a choice, you know, whether we want to be this kind of people or not, either wise or fools. And so, this is what we read here. And the seventh day, that's another holy day. It's a day of blowing the horn unto you. And it's not talking about the Teruah that it's talking about here. You see, it's not talking about the trumpet, the two silver trumpets that there are to be, you know, be blown on every new moon. Here it's talking about the shofar. And that's why, to this day, what is blown on this day, you see, beside the blowing of the trumpets as they were done in the temple, obviously today they don't do it anymore because of that, and they're not really related to the temple, so there is no reason really to stop doing it, because they were long before the temple. But anyway, people make different decisions at different times, and again, at the end of time, when Christ comes, when the God of Israel comes, all things are going to be done in order. But what they blew on this day, and they still do to this very day, is the shofar, because the shofar had a special meaning there, and that's in essence what you see through the entirety of the scriptures, in the prophets, and also in the so-called New Testament. When God comes down, He's going to come down with the blowing of the shofar, you see, not the blowing of a silver trumpet or gold trumpet or whatever. And so this is the only way it has been always understood in the community of Israel from Sinai. That's what the scripture is all about. And verse 2, and you shall prepare a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto the Eternal, one young bullock, one ram. In this case, you notice here, it's only one young bullock, not two, like all the others. One ram, 7 he lambs, all the first year without blemish. And the meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 parts for the bullock, 2/10 parts for the ram, and 1/10 part for every lamb of the, the 7 he lambs. And one he-goat for a sin offering, again, on the Day of Trumpets, or Yom Teruah, or Yom Rosh Hashanah, they call it in Hebrew, the head of the year, because it is a civil year. That is, well, see, when they call civil, what is civil in the sight of God? That means the creation. And so they just call it in later terminology civil instead of religious, which is Passover. And so it shall be for a sin offering to make atonement for you beside the burnt offering of the new moon. You see? Because now you have new moon and the feast falling on the same day. And so you have here double. So 2 bullocks for the new moon. And then you have the daily sacrifices. You see? And then you have the feast itself that had only 1 bullock. So on this day, obviously, they had a lot of sacrifices because it was a double holiday in that sense, a double Sabbath. New moon and the feast of trumpets or whatever people call it. And the meal offering thereof, and the continual burnt offering, and the meal offering thereof, and their drink offerings according unto their ordinances, for a sweet savor, and that is an offering made by fire unto the Lord. And everything that you see here, every tiny little detail, you see, that, you know, is recorded here, was from God. It was not something that people sat down together and decided what the doctrines of their church is going to be. You see, that's the manner of people in the past 2,000 years, unfortunately. And even the Jews, you know, went into that, began to invent their own things. Though in the temple, they adhered basically to the basics. But, you know, in other areas where they could, they began to insert their own understanding, which is not necessarily of God. You see? And that's a problem that unfortunately men has. One of these days they're going to learn to do as the Lord commanded Moses. And that's exactly what is being done here. And the simplicity is there. That's the simplicity in Christ. He tells you, he spells it out. You see, not in mysterious ways. You don't need to be a spiritual giant to understand it. You just follow it, you do it, and that's all there is to it. And so he makes plain everything here. And that's why everything here is recorded. It's not left to human understanding. Verse 7, and on the 10th day, now we are reaching another Sabbath. This is Sabbath number 5. And on the 10th day, well, actually, you have the first Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, then you have the second Sabbath on the holy day of Passover, and then the third one, and the end of it, that's 3. And then you have, obviously, the new moon. Every new moon is like a Sabbath. And after that, you have the Feast of Weeks, that's 4, and then you have the trumpets, that's 5. So we are talking about Sabbath number 6 here. And on the 10th day, all this month, you see, on the 7th month, you shall have a holy convocation, and it shall afflict your souls. You shall do no manner of work, but you shall present a burnt offering. So here it is, another holy day. And the only difference here, while on every other holy day you could eat, the only thing you could do here is offer a sacrifice, but you couldn't eat. And verse 8, but you shall present a burnt offering unto the Lord for a sweet savour, one young bullock, one ram. Notice it's not two. Like all the other ones, the other holy days or new moons, just one young bullock, just like the day of trumpets, one ram, 7 he lambs, all the first year, and that shall be unto you without blemish. And if it happens to fall on the Sabbath, obviously you have also the Sabbath sacrifices. And if it happens to fall on the new moon, you'll have the new moon sacrifices and the day of atonement sacrifices, Yom Kippurim, that is. And, or Yom Kippur, as I call it for short, there shall be. God calls it Kippurim because it is in the plural, you see, Kippurim, on the part of God, on the part of men, all men, and so he calls it Kippurim, but the short form later on became Kippur. And Kippur, in essence, you miss the point when you say just Yom Kippur, because God wanted them to know that it is Kippurim. There are several atonements there done. Atonement for the sins that Christ took upon himself, the God of Israel took upon himself, atonement for the sins of Israel, that were committed because of inspiration by the devil. So this is plural, you see. It cannot be just singular. But, you know, sometimes men decide to do his own thing anyway. This is one of those points. And so he says, there are meal offerings of this day, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 parts for the bullock, 2/10 parts for the ram, and several 10th parts for every lamb of the 7 lambs, 1 he goat for a sin offering beside the sin offering of atonement, and the continual burnt offering and the meal offering thereof and their drink offerings. And on the 15th day of the 7th month, and now he's going to the, in the Sabbath number 7, this is the feast of Sukkot. On the 15th day of the 7th month you shall have a holy convocation, that's another Sabbath, and you shall do no manner of servile work. In other words, if you stop work, well, obviously it's a Sabbath, a day of stoppage, and you shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. And then we read in verse 13, and you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire of a sweet savour unto the Lord, 13 young bullocks. So now we have a lot of them being sacrificed on the feast of Sukkot. 2 rams, mind you, all the others, they were either 1 or 2. New moon was 2, you see, atonement was 1. And trumpets, Feast of Trumpets was also 1, but here you find 13. And this was the sacrifice, so this was the biggest celebration of all the other feasts. And already from here, from Sinai, from the, well, at least here, this is the book of Numbers, but this is whenever they began to observe that feast, this is how they did it. So we read here 13 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs. Usually it was 7. Here it is 14 of the first year, and they shall be without blemish. And obviously, all these things are symbolic of the holiness, not only of the sacrifice, but the one that it offers the sacrifice. In other words, the without blemish is not all, as we mentioned earlier when we talked about the sacrifices, or some people think, having partial knowledge and understanding of the sacrifice of Christ, they look at all the sacrifices and they point everything toward Christ. Well, Christ is only half the equation, you see. Well, he can atone for the sins of Israel, but what about Israel repenting, you see? Because otherwise, if he just atones for the sins of Israel and Israel is not willing to repent, well, he had done absolutely nothing and accomplished absolutely nothing, and his life would have been totally in vain. You see, just like Paul would say about the resurrection. You know, if Christ died but he didn't rise, then your faith is in vain. You see, there's one half and then the second half, you know, both of them have to be there. And so when we talk about without blemish, it's not only pointing toward Christ who is going to be sacrificed without blemish, but the people themselves, when they bring it, symbolically in bringing something without blemish, they are pointing to themselves. We have to approach God without blemish, and it goes both ways. And a lot of people don't think that way, because the false religion has taught for 2,000 years, well, come as you are, you know, Christ is... He done it all for us. He's perfect without blemish. But we can be full of blemish and it's okay with God. You know, just come as you are. You don't have to obey the law of God. Come filthy, come polluted, come defiled. Just have faith in the one that did it for you, who is without blemish. Well, that is absolute nonsense. You see? Christ can avail absolutely nothing to people like that. God is not going to accept his sacrifice that is without blemish for people who are full of blemishes. They must repent. You see, so we always have to think about it every time we come to something like that, a sacrifice without blemish. After all, the bride is the one offering the sacrifices, not God. And that should be symbolic of their state of mind and their body and everything that they do. So always think about it that way. That's why when we raise our hands before God, they must be holy hands, without blood, without iniquity. You see? And when people uphold the law of God, they are raising their holy hands in their own sight. They are holy, but they are not holy in the sight of God. Full of iniquity, you see. Disobedience to the law of God, carnality. Backbiting, you know, hating one another, division, confusion, and all kind of things like that. And so every time we see this word blemish, let's put the emphasis where it belongs. On us first. Before we can come before God, we too, first, must be without blemish. Then the sacrifice that we offer symbolically of that must be without blemish. You see? Then it symbolizes the sacrifice, the ultimate one who is going to be offered on our behalf without blemish. You don't have one half of the story without the other, and that's what so-called Christianity is all about. One half of the story. So what if they believe that Christ died for our sins and that he is a savior and he has done it all? That's absolutely meaningless if they themselves are polluted and defiled. And that was the problem of all the religious people in Israel unto this very day, and the problem of the Pharisees. They forgot to do their part. And so when they came before John to be baptized, when he noticed those people, the Pharisees, the scribes, he says, for the others, when they came to acknowledge their sins and iniquities, and he baptized them. But when the Pharisees and the scribes and all those big shots that came, knowing exactly what was in their heart, you know, just for show, their religiosity, he spurned them. He sent them packing. He told them exactly what God thought about them. Vipers, and so forth. You know, that's not the way to gain friends, according to Dale Carnegie. But that's what he told them. Because God does not accept any sacrifice without blemish from us unless it represents us first. When it is there properly, then the perfect sacrifice without blemish is going to be applied for us. So let's always remember that. And a lot of people nowadays are full of spots and blemishes. They despise the law of God, They'd rather go and do something else to have a beautiful, you know, euphoric experience. They call it charismatic and, you know, whatever other names they want to give it to it. And they forget that unless they are first without spot and blemishes, God is not going to accept anything. And whatever they seek is not going to be of God. You see? That's what the other spirits who are full of spots and blemishes are going to move in. And many people are being taken by that in their ignorance and blindness. And they don't realize it. And so, let's always remember that. All these things should be without blemish. You cannot go to the Feast of Tabernacles unless you are first without blemish, because otherwise God is not going to accept any spiritual sacrifice you are going to offer Him. And a lot of people go to the Feast of Tabernacles, and for that matter any other feast or Sabbath, and services on a weekly basis full of spots and blemishes. Verse 14, and their meal offering, the flour mingled with oil, 3/10 parts of every bullock of the 13 bullocks, 2/10 parts for each ram of the 2 rams, and a several 1/10th part of every lamb of the 14 lambs, and 1 he-goat for a sin offering. So here again, sin offering, goat for a sin offering, not only on the Day of Atonement, but on every single holiday. And he said, you do all that beside the continual burnt offering, that is the daily sacrifices. And so they had to offer the daily sacrifices in the temple because of these things. When holidays came, they had to offer the daily sacrifice first, so they had to do it earlier. And sometimes on days like that, as soon as the midday was over, you see, 12:01, you see, that's when the sun begins to go down. Anytime, technically, from that point, that begins the first evening, they could sacrifice, so they would do it immediately after that, whether it be 1 or 2 o'clock. And then would come the sacrifices, and then after that come again the evening sacrifices, which would be about 3, 4 o'clock, all depending on how long all these things took. And obviously, people that are not familiar with the temple rituals and sacrifices and the way things were done from the beginning of time, you know, they're not aware of it, and so it was also done in the tabernacle. That's where people, you know, begin to invent their own doctrines. And oftentimes, these are people that have no background. We're not a part of a society, of a community that had a continuous background, you know, with all the ignorance that entered also, the purity of the faith is in the book that God had recorded for us. We can all go back to it and read it. And then all those things that were done in the temple were recorded in graphic details in the Mishnah and other books. So people can still go to that and find out a lot of truth, you know, and bypass the things which are not of God. In other words, learn to sift the sheaf from the chaff, and, you know, and know the difference from the chaff, that is. Verse 17, we read, and on the second day, so this was on the first day, and on the second day, that's of the Feast of Tabernacles, you shall present 12 young bullocks. Again, the first one, mind you, it was 13 young bullocks. On the second day, you offer 12 young bullocks. And 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meal offering, and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, and for the lambs, according to their number, after the ordinance, that is, after the law that God gave Himself. They couldn't do their own thing. And 1 he-goat for his sin offering. Well, every day, they had to bring a goat, you see, which also symbolizes, because this one was a goat for the Lord. So these two symbolize Jesus Christ, not just the one on the Day of Atonement. Constant reminder of sin and the ultimate sacrifice. Verse 19, and 1 he-goat for a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering and the meal offering thereof and the drink offering. You see, beside that, this is what they had to do. Now notice how he's going down. Begins from 13. Second day is 12 bullocks, and on the third day, 11 bullocks. So they go down and down and down. 2 rams, 14 he lambs, all the first year without blemish, and their meal offerings, and their drink offerings for the bullocks, for the rams, and for the lambs, according to their number after the ordinance, and 1 he-goat for a sin offering, beside the continual burnt offering, and the meal offering thereof. And we're going to stop at this point. Again, Mordecai Joseph, greetings all of God's people. Until next time.